A virus of devastating proportions has been let loose on the world stage. This one is far more dangerous than Ebola and much more difficult to contain. It is the use of violence as a political tactic. The anarchists, the professional agitators, the Muslim radicals, the lone wolves have reached the conclusion that violence works. It achieves attention. It forces the hand of authority. It challenges the rule of law. When people die in the wake of hostage taking in Sydney, or two New York police officers are assassinated on the streets of Brooklyn, or children are killed in Pakistan, or people are decapitated by ISIL leaders, or property is destroyed by soi-disant defenders of justice, the stabilizers of order are put on notice. Clearly, these actions aren't the same, and there is a temptation at conflation. But from the point of view of those challenging the system, either the prevailing religious sentiment or constitutional principles, violence is a mechanism that inhibits action or intimidates a foe. By any reasonable historical standard, the virus of the 21st century is nowhere as deadly as the violence in the 20th century. Yet there is a difference. The present virus is random. It can break down anywhere, anytime. The present virus has legs because of instant communication and social media. Most significantly, the sensitivity trainers have made it difficult, if not impossible, to restrain violence with counterviolence. As a consequence, the offense dominates the field of play. In what can only be described as a mind-numbing statement, the president of Antioch College, James Dixon, indicates that violence has to be considered against a backdrop of, I quote, class differences in morality. He says, white middle-class America is pretty cool to the use of either personal violence or mass violence as a means of solving human problems. Usually, they look for a method of accommodating or mediating differences, short of personal violence. This is not the acceptable mode of behavior, for example, with a black kid from an inner-city ghetto. At some point, he confirms his morality by beating the hell out of somebody. That, for him, is a positive confirmation. That makes him feel a man. What, in a sense, is moral in terms of being consistent with the ethic of the culture for one group is not moral for another. And you've got a real problem under these circumstances in trying to define what's crime. I am quoting exactly. Should enhanced intelligence techniques be employed to avoid violence, the intelligence agents face charges of human rights abuse. Should a police officer fire his weapon to protect himself, he is guilty of killing an innocent boy. If we bomb ISIL headquarters to protect the besieged Yazidis or Christian minorities from slaughter, we are the neo-crusaders. Violence initiated as a tactic has the offense covered. When terrorists are apprehended and sent to Guantanamo, is the American government that is holding them hostage, that is labeled the human rights abuser. In fact, organizations exist to challenge efforts by the government to protect the citizenry from violence using civil rights arguments or selective historical antecedents. Surely it is not appropriate to throw out the baby with the bathwater, sacrificing civil liberties for security, but we have moved so far in one direction that insecurity prevails at home and abroad. The president is reluctant to use force to protect the U.S. citizens overseas, and he is reticent to employ the National Guard to stem looting and mayhem at home. Anarchism is the result, with this virus metastasizing in every corner of the culture. Popular music embraces violence. Films glorify terror. Mary and John Q. Public keep their heads down, hoping that they won't be affected. But there isn't immunity. Fear is the result of an era when the virus is rampant. There is scarcely a sensible America viewing his television screen who doesn't ask, what have we come to? Will there be a public outcry? It is so hard to predict when the public has been cowed into acquiescence. How many more murders abroad must we endure? How much destruction of property and individuals before the silent majority is vocal? The activists have spoken. They control the media narrative, but building in the crevices of public opinion is another voice calling out to the defense of law and order, words that seem quaint in the present atmosphere. Will these people be heard? Do they want to be heard? This may be the most potent question of the 21st century.